You're listening to Sounds Good on WKMS. It's our midday music and community conversation program. I am your host, Tracy Ross. Kate Lochte has joined me in the studio, along with Constance Alexander. She's the Kentucky Humanities Council presenter and Murray State TQI faculty scholar and poet. Constance, thanks for being on Sounds Good today.
Thank you.
That's a mouthful, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's way too much. My business card is like three cards.
We were really pleased to see you again in the whole humanities catalog that comes out from the Kentucky Humanities Council. As a presenter, there are other presenters from our region, but tell me about how you became involved and what you present when you when you're out there for the KHC.
Well, I've known about the Kentucky Humanities Council ever since I moved to Kentucky, and I've always been impressed by their speakers bureau, that they provide speakers throughout the state on a range of topics. I'm just looking at the booklet right now, and there's a talk on wildflower myths and realities, which is pretty interesting. Another one is called Weeds, Dogs, Mounds, and Mastodons, which is about the history, the 5,000 years ago, the people who lived along the Green River. There are all sorts of topics that are covered by the Speakers Bureau. And the speakers are available to nonprofit organizations at a reduced rate, which is really wonderful. So as a speaker, I get to go around this state to speak to groups that have requested me to come. And it's just a great way for people to learn new things and get information that they find enriching.
So one of the topics that that you may offer, if invited, is one that grew from the project you did, Connecting People in Place, for WKMS.
Yeah, I give three talks, and all of them really are the result of oral histories, collecting oral histories. And the one that is called Connecting People in Places is about the information that I gathered when I did the project with people who were former residents of Between the Rivers. And there was so much information that was gathered during that project, and interest in that topic continues. And the rich cultural history of the people who live between the rivers is something that I think everybody should know about. The former residents, of course, are very filled with all kinds of great information about what it was like to live there. But I think people need to know about those communities that were between the rivers, and the dislocation that was experienced by the families that had to move.
It continues to recast itself in my own mind in terms of the numbers involved. What is the outside number of people who had to go someplace else?
I really don't have an exact figure, because the relocations occurred over a series of decades. Just the other night, I ran into a former resident from Between the Rivers, William Miller, who is now 92 years old, and he had been a former resident of Golden Pond, Kentucky, and was the person who spoke at the burial of Golden Pond, which was in the late 60s. And just Golden Pond included more than 1,000 people who finally were relocated, but there were so many communities between the rivers, from the North End all the way down into Tennessee, and I don't have an exact figure.
I was surprised. I think during our the documentary on Kentucky Dam, David Nickel mentioned in the 10,000 range of families, extended families who had to move.
I'm sure that he has a good handle on that. The interesting thing about the dislocation of families is that it wasn't just the impact on the family that was living there at the time, but the extended families continue to be affected. And those populations are growing older, and their grandchildren and great-grandchildren and sometimes even great-grandchildren may not have the same interest that the other people had, the people who were more directly affected by it.
That's fascinated. Magistrate Duncan from Callaway, during the time that the 80 extension required the filling in of much of the land in Aurora, said that he had lost his home place in Between the Rivers And then that access had also taken his home place where he'd moved from there. So he was a double removal.
Yeah, there are people who moved two, three, and four times because during the time that the dams were being built, there were also roads being built. There was some work at Fort Campbell, apparently, that back in the 30s and 40s affected what land was between the rivers and what was then off limits to former residents. I drove through Land Between the Lakes last week, I guess it was, and now you can't really see Golden Pond anymore. You know, it wasn't there, but if you went there with a resident, you could imagine what it looked like and what the downtown looked like. But now, because of the reconfiguration of the land for 6880, you can't see that either. Now, there are historical markers, which are a good thing to commemorate what was there. But I can imagine it must be another heartbreak for former residents to see still another alteration of the land.
Well, I love the expanse and the design of that highway. What I noticed myself missing are the old planted daffodils that you knew were in somebody's yard. I don't see those as much anymore.
Yeah, you don't. And I think that was one of the most evocative things that I learned about when I was just starting the Between the Rivers project probably about 13 years ago. I didn't realize that the daffodils were planted around the houses that used to be there. And so in the springtime when you could see those flowers, you could imagine the homes. And, yeah, that is, I think it's really kind of sad, and people can agree and disagree about progress or what we call progress or the convenience of better roads, and those are all helpful things, but we do lose something in the process, and that's why I think it's important to talk about displaced communities.
Now, your personal other topics, as you said, grew out of oral history projects. Kilroy was here is of a special interest, I think.
Yeah, that was a project that I did a long time ago in the early 1990s. I became interested in World War II because as a baby boomer, I realized that the impact of World War II on my generation was enormous, although I'm not sure that we acknowledged it. I mean, we've always acknowledged the impact of Vietnam on baby boomers, but so many of my schoolmates when I was growing up, their fathers had served in World War II, and in so many of the other kids' houses, there would be a wedding picture of a soldier and a young woman, often in a suit, who got married on leave and that kind of thing. So I became interested in that, and then my husband was alive during World War II. It was his earliest memories are associated with the war. So I became interested in the impact of World War II on children of the time. And I did a series of interviews and focus groups with people who were children at the time. And it was amazing. I worked with Chuck Simon, who was a Murray resident and a musician. And his parents had kept all of his letters from World War II, and they were amazing. He was an outstanding writer, and he was more involved in the occupation of Germany. He got into the service right at the end of the war, but I had that kind of document to work with. And then Helen Tidwell, who's also from Callaway County, got a group together at her house to talk to me about what it was like for them growing up here in Callaway County during World War II. So putting all of those ideas together with some things from popular culture, including a jump rope rhyme and a recipe for meatless sausage patties, and letters that my husband had from his family and a cousin of his who was in the Army, I put that all together as a book and a performance piece. And my talk on Kilroy Was Here is about the impact of World War II on children on the home front.
And because there are so many boomers out here in our region, our lovely region, it's bound to be a topic of interest, especially here.
Yeah.
I bet you hear a lot of additional stories when you make that presentation.
I have, before I ever put the book together, I did readings of the work in progress to groups all over the state. And every time I gave a talk, people would add new information. There had been a jump rope rhyme in my manuscript that when I read it to someone, to a whole group, someone came up to me afterwards and gave me a new rhyme that actually was the real rhyme that children said. And it was something like, whistle while you work, Hitler is a jerk, Mussolini something, 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 something. But I don't remember my original lines, but the person told me that the new lines were, Mussolini pulled his weenie and now it doesn't work. And whoever had given me the original jump rope rhyme had apparently been reluctant to tell me that. But
you got the expurgated version.
Every time I talk about Kilroy Was Funny. Here and the stories people told me, I find new stories. And I'm a real fan of people telling their stories. I think that runs through everything that I do for the Humanities Council Speakers Bureau, that we need to tell our stories and we really need to encourage other people to tell their stories too.
So the Kentucky Humanities Council just invites inquiries, I gather, through the website or through the office. And they're really nice folks to work with.
They are amazing. They don't have a huge staff and they do a huge job. And it's wonderful that the Speakers Bureau people are available to nonprofit organizations at a booking fee of $125. And the Humanities Council then pays the honorarium and the travel. So the sponsors are responsible for overnight accommodations if they're needed. But it is a really excellent way to bring a speaker into your nonprofit group. And I've spoken to different historical societies, groups, and libraries, and homemakers. I forget what you call it now. We have county extension agents. and I got to address a conference of county extension agents, which was incredible because I learned from them. I didn't really know much about county extension agents, which is another amazing thing.
It's a big story of its own.
It really is. So all different kinds of nonprofit organizations book the speakers, and for-profit organizations are also able to book speakers. It just costs them more. And there's also the Chautauqua, who are people who reenact a certain specific person from history.
Just up the road in Benton, old Dick Usher does Pee Wee Reese.
Yeah, it's
cool.
It is just exciting, and they can go into the schools. Lucy Bakewell Audubon is an example, a woman who portrays the wife of John James
Audubon. The angry wife of John James Audubon.
Well, she had reason to be angry, believe me. I've always been very interested
story,
in her. I think she would make an excellent play. Daniel Boone is another person, George Rogers Clark, Rosemary Clooney, Henry Clay, personalities who are very well known in Kentucky history.
Mr. Henry Clay has visited Western Kentucky several times in the last couple of years.
Yes, I've met him. So that's the kind of thing that the Humanities Council makes available, not just the Speakers Bureau, but also the Chautauqua folks who are more actors in a way. You know, they reenact a real person.
Yeah. Okay, so we've been talking with Constance Alexander about the Humanities Council, and to get in touch with them, it's really great to call Catherine Ferguson at 859-257-5932, or you can email her, and she's a Catherine with a C, Ferguson, catherine.ferguson@uky.edu.
Yeah, that's great.
Thank you, Connie, for being with us.
Thank you.
You're listening to Sounds Good on Murray State's NPR station WKMS. We're online at WKMS.org.